knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
Sup?
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot today, and this is no question.
No question.
No question.
No question.
Kevin the Bird from Up. Didn't see that coming, did you?
The Up the movie?
Yeah. Yep.
Did you just watch Up recently?
No, I just thought of Kevin.
Uh-huh. So well, there's no question.
So I went on YouTube and I was watching some clips. I'm like, God damn it, I love that bird. That bird is great. Best character maybe ever in a movie.
Ever.
Yeah.
In any
All
movie.
All movies. Not
ever.
Just animated movies.
All of them.
Yes.
Kevin, that includes
Kevin the Bird.
Anything the Britain.
I would
Rick,
say.
Nothing. No Casablanca. No nothing.
I would say that maybe Hey Hey from Moana comes in.
Okay. Well, Hey Hey.
Hey Hey's in the conversation. But Kevin the Bird. I would say I would expand this even to literature.
Literature.
Best character, including literature. There's something about that bird.
Something about that bird.
Yeah.
Got to get to him.
Playful.
Yeah.
She's playful. And,
true.
Yeah. Just great.
A joy. In mm-hmm. fact, a bright spot to everyone.
Yep. I kid you not, I was watching the videos of little clips from Up, and uh-huh. I got a big smile on my face. It's like, love that bird.
That's great.
Love that bird.
That's great. That's how my dad feels about the Minions.
Yeah, they're cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your bright spot?
My bright spot, Dan, is I bought a knife. Mm. So we were, it's a kitchen knife.
A little threatening.
It's a kitchen knife.
Okay.
We had lunch one day, and I was walking back, and there was this little boutique store that had a cooking tray in it. What are the the ovens things?
Right. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I went in to take a look at it and immediately realized I didn't want it. But there was only the guy who ran the store in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came over immediately and I felt this pressure that I could not leave without buying something.
Yeah, that's always tough.
Right. So I bought this Japanese knife.
A Ginsu?
It is so sharp.
Yeah.
It is so sharp. I told you that I chopped a chunk of my finger off. You can see.
Yeah. Oh, that's not as big as I thought.
It's not a huge chunk, but
you had a giant Band-Aid on your hand that made me think you might have lost an inch or something.
It was a gusher.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. It bled everywhere. That's why I had to have the giant Band-Aid. Otherwise, it would have melted. It was either that or like Supermax tampons. That's the level we were talking about.
My impression of what it was based on how you described it, I was like, I don't know, maybe part of the nail is gone.
Maybe he lost the whole thing.
That's good that it's not
it's not huge, but it is sharp.
It's not thumb shape altering.
That's
how I would put
it'll
it.
It'll grow back most
but yeah
of
it's
it.
A good knife though,
yeah,
right?
It's a great knife.
Yeah,
chops
good.
Things oh it's so smooth. I was chopping some stuff and it's just like,
you know what you should do? Chopping up broccoli.
I was chopping up broccoli. I've chopped up some bok choy.
Okay.
Some potatoes. Mm-hmm. Did it all, man.
That's great. I'm happy
for
you.
It's a good knife.
So, Jordan, today we're going to be in the past. We're going to be talking about July 2nd and 3rd, 2003.
Ooh.
Where we continue to track Alex's incredibly homophobic period of his show.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on that front.
Yeah,
so much that on our last episode from 2003, a caller called him out on it.
It's very weird to hate Harry Potter and the LGBTQ community at the same time, right? You have to, like, you know.
Well, in the present day, maybe.
Yes,
in 2003, it might have been easier. But we'll get down to business on this episode. But before we do, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, Comfrey sucks. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Demon Feast is the new Monster Mash. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
The Demon Feast.
Next, need more Knowledge Fight crossovers. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
We're open. Next, Lauren. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Lauren.
And instead of saying hello or thank you to this next person, I'm going to say whoop whoop to Shaggy 2 Dope. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Whoop whoop indeed.
Next, Rusty. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Rusty.
And finally, we got a technocrat in the mix. So thank you so much. And hello to Kirk. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
We got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
All right.
Yes, sir.
So, Jordan, we are here in the past. How do you feel being in the past?
I feel like maybe it's actually Shaggy 2 Dope who gave us, like, you know, 50 cents or whatever, and it's very funny to me. What if it's the real...
I hope it is.
I hope so, too.
I
how fun would that be?
I have some respect for the Juggalos.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Not enough to get a Hatchet Man tattoo, but enough to think very seriously about going to the gathering.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there. We'll be there someday.
One day. One sweet day. Not performing. We will not do a live podcast.
No, absolutely not. I don't know how I feel about being in the past. I don't like how much more homophobic things are.
Yeah, it's a little blunt.
Really explicit.
Yeah, especially during this, like... little period.
Yeah.
It hasn't been, like, consistently right in your face throughout some of this 2003 period, like into June. But I don't know what's going on now. He's just in a mood.
I mean, it doesn't get quite as much blood libel as the gays are stealing your children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's pretty intense.
Well, they're stealing them to raise them as their own, not to drink their blood.
Well, yes,
so
it's a little better, I guess.
So anyway, Jordan, here is an out-of-context drop from today's show.
It is a world so nightmarish. It is Hades on Earth. Thanks for the call.
You have a great day.
You too.
It is Hades on Earth. You have a great day.
You too.
You too. It doesn't get much more obvious how serious your show is.
I love the juxtaposition of that. That's so
that
good.
That is so
beautiful.
That caller
sounds so sweet. You have a nice day.
You have a nice day. You too, sir. You know, look, just because it's Hades doesn't mean we can't be polite.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. So Alex is concerned at the beginning of this July 2nd episode about Tom Ridge, the Homeland Security Secretary. And he makes a little bit of a prediction of what's to come.
He's going
to
be president?
I don't think that Alex's prediction has come to pass.
Okay.
And I've got Ridge on tape on C-SPAN, the head of Homeland Security, saying we're going to have four levels of security clearance to have everyday jobs. You're going to have a card to have a job and won't be able to go certain places. And if you've got bad credit or ever even had a misdemeanor conviction, you'll have nighttime curfews. But that's okay for the good citizens. They'll have their card until they don't pay their taxes properly or something. Folks, this is so horrible. This is right out of The Running Man. I mean, it makes me want to start just giggling insanely. I mean, this is so over the top. This is so evil.
Yeah, so
he's
don't...
right.
What?
It is so over the top.
Oh, it is over the top.
It's way over the top.
Yeah. We don't have four layers of security clearance to have jobs.
No.
There's not curfews.
True.
I guess there have been sort of circumstantial curfews, like when there were protests.
Right.
There were curfews enacted, and, you know, for the beginning of COVID when things were surging. There was businesses closed earlier.
Hey, I mean, at the coupon shit place that I worked at, I had a key fob to get in. That's a level of security clearance.
That's not what he's talking about.
No, it's...
So, yeah, this is one of the predictions that Alex is going to conveniently forget that he was pushing.
Well, he's right about everything, Dan.
Right. Of the things that he remembers and misrepresents, he's 100%.
100% accurate.
One thing he's also pretty good at is faking being emotional. And he does a bit of that at the beginning of this show. And it's just, it's tacky.
But according to the neocons, there's no Patriot Act 2. Patriot Act 1 didn't take your rights. The lying liberals. No, the lying liberals, Chucky Schumer's, Hillary Clinton's, Dianne Feinstein's, Barbara Boxer's, they all voted and helped author the Senate version. How dare you claim you're fighting them when you're with them? You make me sick, you gun-grabbing, missile-trading, supercomputer-handing-over, neocon liar trash, open-border remoting. You're destroying this country. I am so sick of you, you lying bull. Man, I am sick of these neocons. I am getting madder and madder at these people. They are conning and manipulating the backbone, the bedrock conservative Christian America. You have been so conned. I am so sick of Sean Hannity and all these liars. Man, I tell you what, I am really, you're not upset about what's happening. These traitors tell you none of this is happening as it's being set up. These traitors are the ultimate liberals. We'll be right back.
You have a great day.
Did he just have a fake rage-gasm at us?
Yeah, I think so, especially with that sort of refractory period that we ended up in.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a good performance.
Eh.
Very false.
Uh-huh.
But you get that sense of like, this is where the real opposition to people like George W. Bush comes from. He thinks that they are liberals.
Right.
They're secret liberals.
He's not above the two. No,
he's far to the right of it.
Christians yes. only.
Yes.
Everything else is to destroy conservative Christians.
Right.
Because I'm above the two-party system.
I'm above the left-right paradigm
exactly.
in as much as I am broken it by going
exactly.
so far to the right and disproving horseshoe theory, by the way. Yeah, cool. Glad a lot of people fell for that. So Alex has a news story that he is drastically misreporting on this episode.
Here we go.
Talking about the culture of death, half of Swiss deaths dubbed suicide. Half of Swiss deaths dubbed suicide. Half of their deaths, and it's assisted suicide. So the Swiss have got it right when it comes to having a low crime rate because their whole population is armed, but they're also socialistic. And the government is killing the people, and in many cases, even when they don't want the euthanasia. It's now happening in this country as well, as Wesley Smith at the Wall Street Journal has documented.
This is weird.
Point of order.
Yeah.
Point of order.
I'm listening.
Super point of order.
Listening.
You cannot both have an entirely armed population and still tell me that the government is just murdering them.
Yeah,
that's
that seems like it should be the thing that protects
people. It disproves
people.
Your entire fucking argument.
Right, and if it were true, which it's not, that
exactly.
half of the deaths in Switzerland are suicides,
yeah.
then you'd have to call into question, hey, all of them are armed. Is that leading to a higher rate of suicide?
You would have to ask a lot of questions that he is specifically glossing over.
But, I mean, he's just misreporting this story.
Sure.
From the coverage that you're hearing here, you would think that the news story that he's talking about says half of the deaths in Switzerland are the result of suicide. Or, as he clarifies, assisted suicides, which people may or may not want.
Sure.
If that were true, that would be a staggering statistic.
It'd be huge.
But it's not.
Okay.
The reality of this story is that there was a University of Zurich study that was conducted on Swiss attitudes towards euthanasia. The report reflected that there was a widespread permissive stance in the country that the practice has generally, as long as it's done with an altruistic motive.
Right.
Also, a February 2003 article in the British Medical Journal found these numbers. Quote, according to the president of one of the Swiss Right to Die societies, around 1,800 requests for assisted suicide are made each year. Two-thirds are rejected after screening. Half of the remaining people die of other causes, leaving about 300 suicides assisted by the societies annually.
Get the fuck out.
This constitutes around 0.45% of the deaths in Switzerland.
God damn them.
Yeah. So a June 2003 survey written up in The Lancet sought to find some data on the assisted suicide rates in the countries of Belgium, Denmark, Italy, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Switzerland. This found 1% or less rates in Denmark, Italy, Sweden, and Switzerland. The data from Belgium and the Netherlands is a little more complicated, and it's not really relevant to our discussion here, so I'm not even going to get into it. Anyway, the point here is that multiple studies had come out around this time that each of them very clearly put the rate of assisted suicide in Switzerland at under 1% or even less than 0.5%. So where's Alex getting that number from? You heard one thing, and that's possibility, mm-hmm. what you were responding to. I think it's also possible that he just didn't read the article that he's covering, and he just skimmed this part. Quote, the study examined 3,350 deaths in German-speaking Switzerland and found that half of them involved some form of euthanasia. So there's that. There's half of this of these deaths in German-speaking Scandinavia. And if you were just, German-speaking Switzerland, if you just read that, you might get an idea of it. But this was specifically a subset of terminally ill patients in German-speaking Switzerland that the study was considering. So it's naturally a population where you'd expect the rate to be higher, and it isn't indicative of all of the deaths in Switzerland.
Yeah.
This is just outlandishly sloppy work on Alex's part and serves as yet another example of why people who listen to him and think they're getting any kind of real information or the things that they're saying, it's based on an ounce of study, they're all being scammed. If you believe any, these things that Alex is getting into, you're a fool.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. Harold and Maude came out 30 years before this movie, this shit right here. We should all be fine with somebody with terminal illness just going, fuck off.
I think it's a tough issue for some, especially like the discussion of it.
Sure.
But, I don't know why you wouldn't let someone who's terminally ill not be forced to be in pain.
No, suffer because God says so for another 8 months.
It's a tough line for me to think makes sense. So Alex gets some calls, and oh my God, what? More homophobia?
Hey, I wanted to give you more bad news about Walmart. Have you heard the story that came out today on Walmart about the gay rights?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I just thought it was very interesting in that they were saying here their vice president for communications, Mona Williams, told the Times that the most important factor was a letter to senior management from several gay employees. Apparently, there was a gay rights, what was the name of this, the Pride Foundation, a Seattle gay rights organization. They invested in Walmart to get this policy changed. And they were saying here that this Mona Williams was saying, we want all of our associates to feel they are valued and treated with respect. No exceptions.
Well, let me just stop
Gross.
You. Let me just stop you.
Yeah. Disgusting.
Why should anybody be talking about sex, period, at their job?
Well, I'm gonna tell you something. I used to work for Walmart, okay? And I was fired from Walmart. Are you ready for the reason that I was fired from Walmart?
Let's
Why was
it.
That, Bill?
Because a customer said that she didn't like the way I looked at her.
I'm absolutely certain that's not what that guy got fired
boy.
For.
Oh, boy. If a man says it's because a woman didn't like the way I looked at her,
I think there's probably more to the story.
The write-up is going to be more detailed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And guess what? According to Alex and this guy's presumed political beliefs, he should have no problem with the company firing him for any reason. Employment is an aggressively voluntary agreement for Alex and his audience. Freedom of association and all of that. So
of course.
He shouldn't be complaining. Anyway, this is a story about Walmart releasing a statement that they would expand their non-discrimination rules to include gay and lesbian employees. This was hot on the heels of the Supreme Court decision Lawrence versus Texas, which found that having criminal sodomy laws is unconstitutional. Tough to believe that that's where things were in 2003. Walmart still was very clear that they weren't going to extend benefits to same-sex couples, but this decision that they made was still pretty impactful. Now, if you were fired because you were gay or you were bullied by coworkers for your sexual orientation, you had some recourse within the company. The New York Times article about this is remarkable, as it points out that this made it so 9 of the 10 largest Fortune 500 companies had implemented rules against sexual orientation discrimination. The only one that didn't was ExxonMobil. And even more remarkable, after Exxon acquired Mobil in 1999, they, quote, revoked a Mobil policy that provided medical benefits to partners of gay employees, as well as a policy that included sexual orientation as a category of prohibited discrimination. They actively got rid of those rules.
ExxonMobil, we're actually evil.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm noticing this real strong homophobia on Alex's part here in 2003, which is... It's troubling.
Yeah, it's gross. It's so gross.
Yep.
Stop it.
It's gross.
And also, you this all happened 20 years ago, and now it's just being, like, transposed onto trans people.
Sure.
Like, it's just, It's the same shit.
But I think you're absolutely right that a lot of that attention is going or just being repackaged in that direction.
Yeah.
But I also think that some of it is just playing the exact same song over and over again. Like, for instance, we recently had a bunch of people trying to do a straight rights parade.
Hooray.
Yeah, and listen to this.
Yeah, I just think it's quite interesting, though, that they're going to give all these extra rights to the gays. But what about the heterosexuals? What about heterosexual rights?
Well, there's no such thing, and you know that. The stated plan of UNESCO that Bush just signed on to is to destroy the family unit. It is called a disease to end the family. Public statement, the manual put out by UNESCO for its diplomats.
Yeah, well, just to put in a plug for the competition on this. Let's all shop at Target or somewhere else. You know what I'm saying?
Oof, I do know what you're saying.
Oh, why isn't there an International Men's Day, Dan?
Sure. Yeah. So here's the thing that always gets me about these bigoted shitheads. I can't handle when they say things like "What about straight rights?" or complain that gay people are getting extra rights when anti-discrimination rules are put in place. They're so privileged and disconnected from the actual reality of oppression that they don't even realize that any discrimination laws that protect gay people protect straight people, too. If a company doesn't hire you because you're gay, they've violated anti-discrimination laws. And if they specifically don't hire you because you're straight, they've violated the exact same anti-discrimination law.
Oh.
These rules are often looked at as being extra rights for gay or lesbian employees, but it's a broader idea of non-discrimination applied equally for all. Folks like this caller just don't understand or care about that because he's a giant homophobe, and because the very idea of people not getting a job or being harassed by coworkers for being straight is unimaginable to him, and so it's not even a reality in his world.
Yeah. I mean, it's so simple to be like, okay, let's look at this anti-discrimination policy. Does it protect me as well? Oh, it protects everybody. So let's say there was a situation where I become the minority.
Mm-hmm.
This protects me from the majority.
Mm.
It's very simple. It's so simple. But that idea of eventually I will be the one without power.
Yeah. But
unreal to them.
And it's just such a bizarre misinterpretation of things to be like, this is specifically to make it so you can't make fun of gay people at work anymore.
Yeah.
When in reality, it's adding sexual orientation as a class of things that you can't discriminate against.
Right.
And you know, the same things that protect people of ethnic minorities also protect white people from discrimination.
It's the same thing. It's discrimination.
Such nonsense. Anyway, JonBenet Ramsey died a while back.
Good for him.
She, her?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, wasn't even paying attention.
This caller has an interesting theory about that.
They're killing children, and that brings up another point that not many people know, and I just found out recently also, is that another name for Satan in the occult is JonBenet. Take a look at JonBenet Ramsey. You know, there's something there. I believe she was a child sacrifice. No one's ever been brought to justice for that either. They all got covered up.
Right out in plain view. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thanks.
Oof.
That is how every comedian writes a joke.
There's something there.
Hey, okay. JonBenet, that's the devil. JonBenet, I think there's something there.
Is there something there?
I think I could hammer out a minute out of that. I think I could hammer a tag at least.
It's a cliche thing that comedians say. It's like, is that something?
Is that something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of association that is required to create a very compelling theory in the world of Alex and
Yikes.
His very not thoughtful listeners.
That sounds like something. Is there something there?
So Alex has another big story that he's promoting on this day. First, half of the people who die in Switzerland are assisted suicides, which is not true. And the other one is that women are becoming more pro-life. They're turning against abortion.
Sure.
And this just sort of a warning. This is a gross clip.
The balance between pro-choice women and women who say abortion should be outlawed or severely restricted is shifting towards the pro-life side, bumping that group into the majority in the debate over reproductive rights, according to a new national poll. 51% of women surveyed by the Center for the Advancement of Women said the government should prohibit abortion or limit it to extreme cases such as rape, incest, or life-threatening complications. So if somebody rapes you, you want to kill the child. That's real good. And then an even bigger crime.
Wow. That's some barbaric shit Alex is on here.
I mean,
I honestly don't think that I've ever heard him get into the specifics of his anti-abortion beliefs, so I was actually a little surprised that he would have that hard of a stance and that he would express that publicly, that even in cases of rape, people should be forced to carry a pregnancy to term. That's wild. I mean, it's just nuts. And if somebody can't understand why, explaining it isn't going to help, so we'll move along.
I mean, that's the type of when you read stories where it's like that happens and then they get visitation rights. The rapist gets visitation rights to the kid is like, I mean, just fucking unconscionable. Unconscionable.
That's horrifying and that's low on the scale.
Yeah, no, I know.
The abuses that are implicit.
No, I understand.
Also, it took me forever to track down the article he's reading, but I finally did, and it's from the Washington Times, covering a survey conducted by the Center for the Advancement of Women. The survey found that 51% of women surveyed, quote, say abortion should be outlawed or severely restricted. They're shifting toward the pro-life side, bumping that group into the majority in the debate over reproductive rights. There's no link to this survey, and I can't find it, so I really can't discuss too many of the specifics, but the article does say that there's a 3% margin of error, so who knows if this is actually representative of a majority. Either way, this is supposed to be up from 45% on that side in 2001, so even if I'm being a little iffy on the specifics because I don't have access to them, it does seem to show a trend of lowering support for abortion access.
Sure.
It does appear that this trend has turned around, as a Pew Research study in May 2021 found that 59% of respondents said that abortion should be, quote, legal in all or most cases.
Just in time for it to be illegalized.
The numbers look even worse for Alex if you just include women, because 62% of people who women who were surveyed said abortion should be legal in all or most cases.
Of course.
If you look at Gallup's data on abortion attitudes, it doesn't quite track with the results of this survey, because they have historical data that goes far back on that question.
Sure.
Based on the data I can find, I'm going to guess that this survey that's being reported on in the Washington Times was an outlier in the data, or possibly the results came from a poorly worded question or options that people could choose.
Right.
But either way, the public opinion was fairly pro-abortion access at the most of recent history,
including
in 2003.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is reflective of a tide turning.
Yeah. Rasmussen says Trump is up 40 points this year. Isn't that crazy?
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So Alex is, he's talking about this assisted suicide thing.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, Kevorkian's going to come up.
Sure.
I'm going to need a citation on this.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, Kevorkian lost his medical license for doing things with corpses I can't mention on the air. He lost it in two separate states, by the way, caught in dark rooms with dead bodies. He is a ghoul. So don't tell me it's about somebody's rights. This isn't about you being allowed to kill yourself, which is bad enough. This is about killing you.
No. The implication here is that Dr. Kevorkian was fucking dead bodies, and
yep,
that's why he lost his medical license. I can find no evidence.
You can't find any evidence that he lost his medical license
No.
because he fucked dead bodies?
Nope. Kevorkian was licensed to practice in Michigan and California, and his license in Michigan was suspended in 1991. The Michigan Board of Medicine made this decision because they tried to file charges against him for assisting in suicides, but it turned out that there was actually no law against that in Michigan at the time. So the board claimed it had, quote, acted under a state law that gives it the power to withdraw the license of any doctor who acts in a negligent or incompetent manner or who administers drugs for other than lawful diagnostic or therapeutic purposes. Some of Kevorkian's patients had lethal medication.
Right.
Administered to them, and because of that, the board claimed the authority to take his license.
Of course.
He lost his license in California in 1993, and this only happened because one of his patients was from California. He didn't actually apparently ever go to California, and so...
Sure.
I mean, he did prior to going to Michigan.
Right. Well, he had to get
his lawyer
license.
Said that, like, he hadn't even been there in years.
Yeah.
Alex can say lurid shit like this all he wants, but he can't prove any of this, and it's just disgusting.
Yeah, it did
seem... This is a family show.
It did seem like Kevorkian had, at the very least, the idea that there was an altruistic motive behind his actions.
Yeah.
I have seen a documentary or two.
Mm-hmm.
At no point in time Did they mention him fucking dead bodies?
Man, I tried so many search term combinations. Trying to find at least even
Kevorkian,
like
necrophilia,
even like a conspiracy blog that had something that would give me a foothold,
right?
In order to find like, oh, this is what's being talked about. I couldn't even find anything.
No.
Anyway, Alex has an exciting guest coming up.
And in the third hour, I'm making Mike come on, Mike Hansen. The third hour, 30 minutes into the third hour, Mike's coming on. He apprehended the three thugs. One of them ran off, but he apprehended them trying to rob him. He got his gun and stopped him in his underwear.
Yep, so Mike Hansen's coming back to tell the same story.
Great story. We got to get him back on. We got to get him back. Imagine if Carson had the same person on the same week.
And make no mistake, he tells the exact same story.
Exact same story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at least it's true then, I guess.
You'd think. I'm willing to believe it's true.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So Alex gets a call here towards the end of the show after Mike's interview. Mm. And this caller wants a particular audio piece that Alex has played in the past, which is a Jello Biafra spoken word thing. And
yeah.
This exchange is so fucking funny. How it ends is the best.
I'll play it a couple times next week or something, or maybe tomorrow.
Well, I appreciate it.
I got to be honest with you. I got the CD right here.
Yeah.
And I've been playing this for about 8 years.
Yeah.
And the CD is scratched and messed up.
I don't care about that.
Well, hold on. Well, I'm not going to air a CD that skips on air.
Oh, okay.
But let me finish. I've had this thing, I don't know, 7-8 years. The CD, I spilt coffee on the table, got on a bunch of CDs. When I cleaned them, they all worked, but this one, the CD is now shot. And so I have to go out and find it and buy it again. Now, if somebody wants to go out and buy the CD for me and mail it to me, the sale will air in the next few days. I'll never get time to go to the record store or the CD store or the music store.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I did, they probably won't have it. So if people want to hear it, how about somebody overnights it to me and then you'll hear it?
Well, if I could find it somewhere.
A lot of people have got it. Yeah, I'm just saying, the CD's messed up. That's why I haven't been airing it.
Okay, well, that's no big deal. How you doing? Everything going okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing all right. I just...
It's like the caller's worried about
it. Yeah, yeah. Hey, man, you doing all right?
It's like a friend checking in.
You got a lot of this CD stuff going on right now. It feels like a big mess.
Like, that's not... It's deep into the call. It's not like this is opening pleasantries. It's kind of like,
hey buddy, how you doing?
Hey, you all right?
Yeah, you doing okay?
I like that. I think that like his callers at this point in history are split down the middle of horrifying monsters and homophobes and people who have like real pleasant conversation.
They do seem nice.
Yeah.
They do seem absurdly nice.
How you doing, man?
Hey, listen.
You doing
I
want
to hear that song. How you doing?
You doing?
Doing all right?
So we get to the 3rd, July 3rd.
Okay.
Day before July 4th. Very exciting.
Right.
Alex is singing a song that we can tell he sings a lot in the present.
There is so much. Folks, I've got a stack of at least 80 articles. I counted them up. 82 articles. How do I cover them all? How do I cover this? This is unbelievable. It's 10 times worse than 1984. I can't believe this. And Patriot Act's got secret arrests, secret executions for any misdemeanor. I mean, just unbelievable.
So I think, first of all, the emotions are fake.
Unbelievable.
But it's so interesting to see he's been just overworked for his entire career. There's just been too much to cover.
It's never been... There's never been a single day where he's like, listen, against all odds, today is kind of a light show.
Yeah.
I've only got a couple of stacks here. I think I'm going to talk to that guy. He asked me how I was doing earlier.
Casual Friday.
Yeah.
Let your hair down. Let's do this.
Hey, you know what? Let's have a fun story today.
Sure.
Never.
So we get to some of the news and some more fake emotions.
Sure.
And then a real troubling point.
Folks, it's happening. It's the exact thing with added templates overlaid with high technology. It is unbelievable.
oh, I mean, I just, oh, man. And then they've got this Talibai's fighters, if I'm pronouncing that right, accused of lawlessness, elements of Ahmed Chabai's Pentagon-backed army have been accused of by American troops of lawlessness. So that's the American troops, London Telegraph. It's also MSNBC on Infowars.com. Elements of Ahmed Karzai's, they got all these different ways to pronounce his name. I've heard of Ahmad Karzai or Chalibai.
They've Pentagon's got all these different
army
ways.
Have been accused by American troops of lawlessness. Now, he was convicted for $300 million of bank theft, okay?
So it's really embarrassing that Alex doesn't seem to know the difference between Hamid Karzai and Ahmad Chalabi.
There's a big difference.
They are very different people.
Huge difference.
Not just different pronunciations of the same name. Hamid Karzai was the president of Afghanistan from 2000 to 2014. Conversely, Ahmad Chalabi was an Iraqi politician who would go on to become the president of the Governing Council of Iraq in September 2003. He is the founder of the Iraqi National Congress political party. The headline that Alex is reading is about Ahmad Chalabi, who played a large role in the lead up to the Iraq War and then fairly quickly was found out to be a bit of a con man.
Yeah.
Through relationships he'd cultivated with a group of Republican politicians over the years, from the first Iraq War onward, his political party, the INC, was the recipient of over $100 million from our government. Much of the bad intelligence that was used to convince the public that a war in Iraq was necessary, like the ideas of weapons of mass destruction and Saddam's connections to terrorism, came from people associated with Chalabi and the INC.
Yeah, what Ice Pick or whatever that fucking name was.
By 2004, he'd fallen out of grace with U.S. intelligence services, who had strong suspicions that he was sharing closely held information with Iran. The CIA had actually voiced misgivings about him and his information all along and suspicious connections to Iran, but folks like Dick Cheney didn't care.
We want to start a war!
None of this is to say that the war going to Iraq was all because of Chalabi. Most of the members of Bush's cabinet were more than willing to accept whatever rationale was put in front of them to get rid of Saddam, and probably would have found someone else saying what they wanted to hear had Chalabi not filled that role.
Yeah.
All this being said, it's really fucked up that Alex doesn't seem to know that Karzai and Chalabi are two different people. Like, he's presenting himself as the only person who can decode the secret messages behind the news that the man won't tell you, and it's clear that he doesn't even know elementary details about the topics he's discussing. If I were Steve Pachenik, I can definitely see how Alex would be a perfect mark. Like, oh, yeah. Exactly the sort of person that you'd be like, I can use this guy.
Easy.
Yeah. And another thing that I was thinking about, two things. One, I'm really curious where Steve is at.
In this time period.
Yeah, because I know that Alex interviewed him for the first time in 2002. And so I know that they are aware of each other and have talked. But he's not been on in the time that I've listened yet. I'm eagerly awaiting that first time Steve pops up.
He's a comet. He's not in the solar system yet.
It doesn't appear that. Yeah, it doesn't appear that he's in regular rotation.
Right.
And then the second thing that I've been thinking about is, like, this guy isn't a star, Alex. You know, to use more celestial terms, like, he's not in 2003.
Oh, do you mean this Alex is not a star?
Yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't have, like, he's got these skills that are just intrinsic, definitely.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the sort of showmanship that he does later on.
Right.
I can see why he wasn't famous.
Yeah.
He wasn't, like, super famous. It wasn't 9/11 that necessarily rocketed him. He's kind of boring.
It is interesting to see him in what you would consider kind of that infancy of his progression.
Yeah.
But that... they have all these different ways of pronouncing their names. That idea of, like, no, I didn't fuck up. It's that this human being has been like, hey, I'm going to trick people with a bunch of different ways to pronounce my name.
Yeah. And not only that, like, the trying to cover up that you fucked up.
Exactly.
It actually reveals
a much
larger unawareness or ignorance.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So Alex has a guest other than Mike Hansen, who told the same story again.
Did he win this time?
Yes. The race? No. He won in terms of the standoff with the robbers. So Alex has another guest. It's a guy named Red Beckman.
Okay.
We've talked about him in the past. He is a weirdo who doesn't believe people should pay taxes. He also is on here because he has a interesting theory about juries, and how if you're on a jury and you don't agree with the law, even if you think the person's guilty, you should just vote them not guilty. Jury nullification of laws, essentially, is the push that Red Beckman's got.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine somebody from Texas thinking that.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. So, Red's got an interesting take on freedom of religion in the First Amendment. I think I disagree with him.
They told us that we have free speech, that you can criticize the government. We have free press so that the press can criticize the government without the government lashing out at the press. Now, the same thing, the same purpose, you see, was the freedom of religion. The minister was to be able to stand up in his pulpit and condemn government and public servants if they were operating outside of the law. They have changed that completely until now. It's the freedom of the Muslims, the freedom of the Buddhists, the freedom of everybody else. And you know, they're just absolutely running roughshod over the principles of the First Amendment.
So I would guess that Red Beckman would have a slightly different position if the conversation were about, like, an imam telling their mosque who to vote for, who to vote against. That's just a prediction that
I
have.
No. I think he's very consistent across all religious ideologies.
Pastors can do exactly what Red wants them to do, and they can be as political as they want. They just have to pay their taxes then. Mm. Advocating for or against specific politicians or policies is a violation of their tax-exempt status. There's no law against preachers doing targeted political organizing. They just have to pay taxes if they do.
Right.
Red wants to be able to use churches as political organizing entities because, of course, he does.
Right.
The political project these folks are engaged in, even in 2003, is attempting to lead a Christian nationalist state. One path toward that is associating voting a certain way with following your religion, which is what Red would like people to be forced into.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
That is so funny. Did they rewrite the First Amendment?
Yeah.
I mean, he said... But they changed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the First Amendment was supposed to be this, but they changed it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
did they rewrite it?
Well, the interpretation of it is no longer that the freedom of religion is about... Like, originally, the interpretation that the founders wanted is that the religious leaders can lead campaigns against politicians. That's what it was protecting.
Yeah, but see, they could have written that one in there.
Could have. I think he's just talking about, like, the interpretation of it has changed to include, like, the separation of church and state being a thing. And
Right. But it's very clear. It's very clear. The government shall make no law restricting.
Yeah.
And it says religion.
Right.
It doesn't say Christianity.
And
lose.
Well, there's that. And then second, it doesn't say, like, the government shall not stop religious leaders from talking shit.
Yeah.
And then...
No shit talk.
Yeah.
Come on, buddy.
So... Alex gets a call while Red Beckman is on. Red stays through most of the show, and they take calls together. And this caller believes that his phone is being tapped because he can hear noises on the phone.
Interesting.
And he is pretty insistent about this. And here's what Alex has to say.
Hank was called into a talk show, and when he was online, another show. And he heard buttons being pushed and somebody breathing. Well, that's the call screener or the other caller. Sometimes they'll air two calls. This happens a lot, okay?
I had another instance on that.
Well, sir, what I'm telling you is they do not physically have the personnel. You've got
local.
Echelon with, say, 50,000 employees at the NSA. Most of them are on foreign desk watch. And they got a few thousand domestically maximum. They can't listen to all of us or ever do anything with the material. They're announcing they're surveilling us as a chilling effect. It also violates the Fourth Amendment, but it's also as a chilling effect. Red, would you like to comment on this to Hank?
Well, you know, I always said that I would hope that they had my phone tapped because it's probably... the best source of truth that they're going to find.
To hear all the horror stories, the abuse, the evil.
And it gives me a chance, if they're listening, it gives me a chance to talk to somebody else and explain to somebody else what's going on.
And to tell them to have some humanity and not sell out their country for 20 right. pieces of silver.
Right.
So this is fascinating. Like, generally nowadays, whenever one of Alex's listeners calls in with a stupid paranoid theory, Alex does absolutely nothing to reassure them that they're fine and this is it's not happening. He actively encourages their paranoia and lends credibility to their fears. Here in 2003, though, this caller, Hank, is worried that the man is listening in on his phone calls, but instead of saying that that's probably true, Alex argues with him about how it's not happening and it's probably not possible anyway. It's also interesting to me to hear that Alex, he's articulating this view about government surveillance programs. He doesn't actually think that there's widespread spying going on. The government's just revealing that they have spying capabilities in order to scare patriots into thinking that their calls could be listened to at any point, so there's a chilling effect. For many of his other comments, particularly more recent ones, I don't think that this is a position that he's consistent on at all. Also, as the story goes, Judas betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, so either Alex got that very well-known biblical detail wrong, or the hypothetical feds that are listening in to Red Beckman's phone are working at a cut rate. One of the two.
I do like that, you know, because that's an evolution of that, you know, oh, I don't mind if they listen to my calls. I've either got nothing to say or they're going to hear some gross stuff. Ha ha ha. That kind of thing. This is elevating it to, I hope they're listening to my calls so I can get the truth out.
Right.
To the NSA.
I can teach them a little lesson.
Can you imagine surveilling somebody and then eventually being like, you know what? They're right about everything.
That's legit what these dudes think is going on.
And I think that they have come to the conclusion that it's not smart to put people on, because when they listen to these conversations,
wow,
they're getting an education, and they all they have to do is look around them and see what's going on. And they know that we're telling the truth.
Yeah, man. The feds have realized that it's not a good idea to put people on monitoring the Patriots' phones, because they just like, oh, shit, these guys are right.
That is a perfect encapsulation of the shot chaser meme, where I go, it would be crazy to think this.
Uh-huh.
Next clip. I think this.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Bye. Yeah. Fucking
fine. Yep. So Alex is a guy who famously has the documents. Sort of a catchphrase and a joke, because he doesn't.
Yes.
So oftentimes he doesn't provide these documents. And this next clip is actually an interesting instance where he's offering to give the audience a document.
Sure.
Now, mic down for this, because there's a little bit of a catch.
So if you want this report and the AP article, get out to your friends and family. We've got a special today, because it's, we hardly ever do this, where we send out a free document. You can just have the document if you want it, but you'll also get it free if you get the two citizen rule books that have the Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights, Constitution, jury nullification, the power of the jury, the grand jury, famous quotes, little color-covered booklet, 70-something pages, two of those, two silver dollars that are both worth $8 a piece, for $24.95. Okay, that's at cost for Ted Anderson, and you get the document for free along with it. We'll spring Ted up for 3 or 4 minutes and dragging him on the air. Ted, I hope people will get the citizen rule books and the silver dollars and get the free document. This is so important, especially on the eve of the 4th of July. How do folks do it?
Well, as simple as this. They give us a call at...
That's fascinating. I was blown away by that twist.
Yeah. I mean, aren't you the tip of the spear?
Yeah, yeah. And in order to get this document, you have to buy a couple silver dollars from Ted Anderson.
I feel like, aren't you trying to get the truth out?
Well, yeah, but you got to buy some silver from Ted.
Why is there a paywall behind the truth?
Well, because Ted's got silver and he wants you to buy it.
What document is it?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Of course. Why would I be so stupid as to think that?
Well, yeah. here is what it
is. Okay, here we go.
Think about this. Think about how bad things have gotten here. And if you want the DARPA report, the declassified document, broad board agency announcement 03-15, BAA 0315, Defense Agency Research Project, or DARPA, run by convicted felon Admiral Poindexter. Remember, he said last year that everything you do, every call you make, every email you send, will all be tracked by the computers and by the government.
So Alex is so, like, he's full of shit about this. And honestly, it's really pathetic the way he's playing this game. It's so clearly designed to get people to order things from Ted Anderson and Midas Resources and hopefully get them into on the phone with somebody who can tell them all about how important it is to buy precious metals. Yeah. That's the game that's being played.
It's timeshare.
And the document is the thing that's being lured. It's luring them in.
That's so sad.
So this document that Alex is claiming is a declassified report from DARPA is nothing of the sort. He reads off the document identification number, and that alone is a huge clue about how poorly he's covering this. A BAA is a broad agency announcement, not a board agency announcement. The Army's website defines them as, quote, a competitive solicitation procedure used to obtain proposals for basic and applied research and the part of development not related to the development of a specific system or hardware procurement. At very best, the document that Alex is selling his audience as a declassified DARPA report is actually just a posting that a certain government agency is taking pitches for research proposals.
Yeah.
Various government agencies utilize BAAs to find people to conduct research. For instance, the Defense Logistics Agency currently has one open to, quote, identify domestically produced materials from possibly reliable sources to substitute for materials produced by foreign sources or sole source producers.
Sure.
That's all this is.
Yep.
It's DARPA posting a help wanted ad for a project that they called Combat Zones That See. The posting was made on March 25th, 2003, and would close a year later. The project, here's how they describe it. It's a project that, quote, explores concepts, develops algorithms, and delivers systems for utilizing large numbers, thousands, of cameras to provide the close-in sensing demand for military operations in urban terrain. The reason for wanting to do this and explore this research is spelled out in the BAA. Quote, military operations in urban terrain are fraught with danger. Urban canyons and abundant hide sites yield standoff sensing from airborne and spaceborne platforms ineffective. Short lines of sight neutralize much of the standoff and situation awareness advantages currently rendered by U.S. forces. Large civilian populations and the ever-present risk of collateral damage preclude the use of overwhelming force. As a result, combat in cities has long been viewed as something to avoid. However, modern asymmetric threats seek to capitalize on these limitations by hiding in urban areas and forcing U.S. forces to engage in cities. We can no longer avoid the need to be prepared to fight in cities. I read over this and I hate it, but I also understand the rationale for exploring this kind of research.
Yeah.
It's very specifically aimed at targeting a deployable network of sensors and cameras that can track specific vehicles over long distances, including within urban areas. I get why it would be a valuable thing for the government to have during the Iraq war, but I'm also not naive, and I think that the risk associated with the potential misuse of a program like this, it's not something that's worth the benefit that you'd get from creating it,
and so
I would be opposed to this.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
I read a bunch of this proposal, the documents that are on the DARPA website, and I've decided that I'm against it. However, I think that the way Alex misreports on this proposal actually does a disservice to opposing it because it's disconnected from reality. If you want to take this proposal and warn people that this sort of thing has the potential to be gravely misused in the wrong hands, and its implementation in U.S. cities would almost certainly violate people's personal privacy, that would be a fine thing to do, and I think it's a fine conversation. It's just dumb to take this information and then use it to insist that this is a classified document that proves DARPA's doing this to us, because the provided evidence fails embarrassingly short of proving that. It's counterproductive to report information this way, but it's probably deeply unethical and exploitative to use this kind of flagrant misreporting of this information to get people into your gold sales revenue stream. Also, I can find a ton of speculation about this program on blogs, but for the life of me, I can't find anyone that provides specific details about what happened past the posting of this BAA.
Right.
I was able to actually find, though, the project manager, Thomas Stratt. I found his LinkedIn page, and weirdly, Combat Zones That See, that project is listed in his resume. So it's probably real secret stuff that he was working on.
I wouldn't put that in your CV if it was behind classified walls.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, obviously, I think that this sort of program I think that the capabilities that you might be able to develop through it
right.
aren't good. No. And they are definitely things that could be abused.
Yeah, I've seen movies.
Yes. And I think that there's a valid conversation to have around that. But I think the way Alex is doing this just is cartoon shit.
I want to know what it is. So I'm ordering silver. I'm ordering silver mm-hmm. in order to get this free document.
Well, and you're getting an AP story about the document
right.
that proves that it's a real thing right. or something. And you're also going to get like Red Beckman's weird pamphlets.
Totally, totally. Yeah. What am I supposed to do with this document then? Do I use this to win arguments with my family?
Yes.
At Thanksgiving, that's what it is? It's yes. like, hey, listen, guess what? You think I'm crazy? I've bought this document from Alex Jones.
And all it cost me was $25. But I also got silver.
But I also got silver.
And honestly, while I was on the phone, I bought a bunch more silver.
Yeah, explain to me how
it was a good deal.
That's what it's for, right?
No, it's to trick people into buying more metal from Ted.
I know, but from a consumer side, that's what they must be thinking it's for.
Yeah, no, it's so you have the documents, so you can make copies of it and distribute it.
Oh, I'm tired of looking like I'm crazy, so I'm going to tell people that I bought silver and an innocuous document from DARPA.
Yeah.
Yep. Great.
Very strange.
Weird.
But very transparent in terms of the intent on Alex's part. And it's just like, if you were trying to abuse your audience, this is how you would behave.
Yeah, no, the Home Shopping Network is like, we're going to have to put a clock on this because everybody who doesn't buy it is going to die
tomorrow.
But
the Home Shopping Network is trying to sell you beef jerky.
No, I know.
It's not trying to sell you that there's a worldwide conspiracy trying to kill you.
Right, I'm saying that if at the end of their clock that you were going to die...
Right, there's a bomb
unless we
sell all this jerky.
Exactly, yes. That's the problem.
Yes. So Red Beckman has some ideas about the USSR that I don't think...
No, they're great.
I don't think this is real.
I'm sure they're great.
And people just do not understand what happened. The USSR was one of two great world powers at the point where they were dissolved overnight. They were considered one of two great world powers, and they were dissolved overnight. And people don't understand why, and the answer is very simple. It was a false god, and it reached the point where it could no longer answer the prayers of those who prayed to that false god.
Now, something that's really interesting about that is yeah. that if he were speaking metaphorically,
right.
I think that there's something to that. You know, I think that there are governments can collapse because of inability to provide for the needs of the population.
Sure.
I think if you're really generous with the metaphor, I'm fairly fine with what Red's saying. Now, because I listen to this,
yeah.
I know that he's being literal.
He's being very literal.
Yes.
Yeah, if you wanted to say that our government worships the false god of productivity and capitalism, totally fine. But if you want to say that the USSR broke up overnight. Because they were worshiping a false god,
yeah.
literally, like fucking Baal or something,
mm-hmm.
then you might be Red Beckman.
You might be.
You might be.
So yeah, that was a little bit strange. And Alex has another take on this, and that is that like, okay, so the false god of the right. USSR fell,
right.
and now they're trying to do it again.
Okay.
Now they've moved on with it here, but they plan to have it more sophisticated, drugging the population, using propaganda, what they call imperial mobilization in the PNAC documents. Red, have you heard about the PNAC documents where Bush and Cheney wrote public documents before 9/11 that they needed a terrorist attack to invade Iraq and other countries, and that
yes.
they talked about imperial mobilization and a new world order?
Yes.
So none of this is real.
No.
The PNAC document is actually titled Rebuilding America's Defenses, and it was a report released by the Project for the New American Century in September 2000. It's one of the disappointing smoking guns that 9/11 truth folks pull out to prove that Bush did 9/11. This is because this sentence appears in the text. Quote, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. This doesn't prove anything, but it's super fun to say PNAC. Now, larger picture, the words imperial mobilization don't appear anywhere in the PNAC document. They don't appear together, and each word doesn't even appear in the text on its own. Alex is mixing the PNAC document up with Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard, which uses an oft-maligned passage, including the words imperial mobilization. The first time the term is used, it's used three times in the text. The second time is sort of a rephrasing of what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
And the second time was just saying that if Russia was more decentralized, it would be less likely to engage in imperial mobilization. So
yeah.
That's
a good argument.
The first time is the one that is often cited by conspiracy theorists and is misused.
Sure.
So it's in a section about the geopolitical situation in Eurasia, or the Eurasian chessboard, as Brzezinski calls it. It's argued that U.S. influence in Eurasia is exceedingly important to world stability. Possibly more to the point and more realistically, holding the most sway in that region is critically important to U.S. strategic interests, and the prospect of a hostile country having more sway is really threatening to our strategic interests.
Sure.
The text envisions Eurasia is split into four segments on a board. There's the West, which includes most of Europe, where the U.S. is said to have a foothold on the chessboard. There's the East, which is basically China, Japan, North and South Korea, as well as Southeast Asia. There's the Middle Space, which is the former USSR, and then there's the South, which is mostly the Middle East. According to Brzezinski's analysis, a situation that could be seen as a win for U.S. interests is one where the former USSR comes closer to the U.S.'s orbit, where the East doesn't outright expel the United States, and where the South section doesn't end up, quote, subjected to domination by a single player.
Ooh, and so close.
You can kind of see the point that's being made, and
sure,
it's an interesting analysis of
right,
the sort of tensions between these actors.
Yeah, I understand.
Brzezinski points out that, quote, the scope of American global hegemony is admittedly great, but its depth is shallow. That's an interesting point.
That is an interesting point.
And he sees this kind of dynamic as an inevitability, particularly in the Eurasian chessboard.
Sure.
Quote, the very scale and diversity of Eurasia, as well as the power of some of its states, limits the depth of American influence and the scope of control over the course of events. That megacontinent is just too large, too populous, culturally too varied, and composed of too many historically ambitious and politically energetic states to be compliant towards even the most economically successful and politically preeminent global power.
Yeah, I've played Civilization before. They don't just, like, roll over.
You know, it's hard to hold
fucking Gandhi will nuke you.
Yeah. One of the large reasons this is the case is because American influence is not based on the primary tool that has been used by empires in the past, which is direct control.
Mm-hmm.
Brzezinski isn't saying that not taking over countries is a bad thing and that we should change it or something. That's not the case.
Right.
Here's the passage where imperial mobilization comes up. Quote, it's also a fact that America is too democratic at home to be autocratic abroad. This limits the use of America's power, especially its capacity for military intimidation. Never before has a populist democracy attained international supremacy. But the pursuit of power is not a goal that commands popular passion, except in conditions of sudden threat or challenge to the public sense of domestic well-being. The economic self-denial, that is, defense spending, and the human sacrifice, casualties even among professional soldiers, required in the effort are uncongenial to democratic interests. Democracy is inimical to imperial mobilization.
Right.
Anyway, Alex will often misrepresent the grand chessboard, and I guess in this case he got his primary sources confused. Because
mm-hmm.
basically the imperial mobilization in the context of that quote is something that he's saying that this isn't something that our democratic system is really compatible with.
Right, which is why it required a far more authoritarian leaning 30 years after that to do exactly what he said a populist democracy couldn't do.
But even so, I would say that the version of imperial mobilization that's being discussed is not what we have experienced.
No, true.
But still, fair enough.
Yeah.
Also, this is important. George W. Bush never wrote anything that was released by the Project for a New American Century.
I don't believe he ever wrote anything.
Because he was also never a member.
Yeah.
10 future members of his administration were among the 25 initial founding members of the group, and it also, that group did include Jeb Bush, but not George W. The group did hold heavy influence in the Bush years, but the way Alex is talking about this is just cartoonish. Also, the PNAC document ends with a list of people who, quote, participated in at least one project meeting or contributed a paper for discussion. That list does not include Dick Cheney, but what does direct attribution really matter?
Come on.
Much like the case of the DARPA document, Alex does the subject he's talking about a disservice by having no grasp of basic details and making up so much extraneous stuff as to make his stories just more interesting. He's just trying to add a sort of flavor to it, and right. It's changing things past the point of it even resembling reality.
Right.
Opposition to the project for the New American Century is impotent if it's based on an understanding of the group that you'd get from listening to Alex, because it's just bluster and anger leading you down a dead end. InfoWars is where healthy distrust goes to die.
Right.
And that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it seems to me that so many conspiracies like boil down to just reacting to having an aristocracy. You know, like, of course all of these people know each other. They're in the aristocracy. They're connected in the same way that with World War One, all the countries were run by the same family. You know, like, it's that kind of... Yeah. When you have an aristocracy, you can easily draw parallels and connections to them because they fucking went to school together. You know?
And
whether or not they're an actual criminal conspiracy working together, they know each other.
Sure.
You know?
And it's another thing, too, where you have a greater... possibility to make persuasive appearing conspiracy theories, the greater the difference is, the gap between social classes,
because
let's say.
As the gap increases, the number at the top decrease,
and the distance between them increases to a point where people are just completely out of touch
with
people in different social strata.
Yeah.
And the ability to believe various things about people
right.
that you're so disconnected from becomes much easier. You could believe that they're eating people or whatever.
I mean, in a certain sense, the same impetus that gets rich people in trouble for saying, like, milk is what? How many? Is it $1,000 per gallon or four?
How much is a milk?
How much is a milk? Do you give me a milk or do I ask for one?
Uh-huh.
Is exactly the same as being like, oh, well, billionaires obviously drink blood. Mm. Otherwise, why would they be billionaires?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Red Beckman has some thoughts about 9/11 that are dumb.
Okay.
It's just mind-boggling for the American people to... hear the story of 9/11 and how those airplanes were controlled by remote control, and it wasn't the hijackers that flew those airplanes.
They found the hijackers alive, their houses and cars and credit cards paid for by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't find the hijackers alive, and I find this really interesting. The way that this theory of the remote-controlled planes... It seems very popular on InfoWars at this point, which I don't think is something that Alex would want to own.
Oh, yeah.
In the present.
Yeah, I don't think he would like that.
Because it's silly.
And they changed... Didn't they change the main... Like, that one is gone from even the most 9/11.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they let that one go after a while because they were like, "This, yeah, no, I don't."
It's really hard for me to know what is like still within the 9/11 conspiracy canon because a lot of stuff came and went.
It's got to be the beams. I think that's the thing that stays
the same. I think it's just Building 7.
Yeah.
That's probably it.
That's about it.
So you have one last clip here. And I think one of the things that's really, really challenging when you're listening to this stuff is like earlier in this episode, we were talking about Alex... trying to tell this caller, hey, look, no one's listening to your phone.
Right.
But at the same time, he's really trying to scare them. Like, this is how the show ends, and it's like, this is irresponsible.
What do you think would happen if New York was hit with, like, a nuclear bomb?
Oh, if the globalists carry out a terrorist attack and then pose as our saviors? Red, what do you think will happen after the next big terror attack that the military-industrial complex is going to launch? What do you think will happen?
Well, I think it'll be bigger than the last one. You go back and you watch the progression. You know, Ruby Ridge and
World Trade Center, Oklahoma City,
and 9/11. Everyone gets a little bigger than the last one.
Betraying us to accept the tyranny. Well, the CFR just said on Monday we will be attacked again. They say maybe on 4th of July. I hope not. Keep your eyes out for feds, folks.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow on the 4th of July, maybe there'll be a big nuke or something. Maybe there'll be something bigger than 9/11 that happens. Now, you got to be paying attention, maybe not all that closely, but you might notice how this caller asked what would happen if New York was nuked.
Right.
And Alex immediately recontextualized that as the globalists attacking us.
Yeah.
It doesn't even leave room for air.
Couldn't even be an actual terrorist.
That possibility is not even in the consideration.
Terrorists don't exist. It's just the globalists.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of speaks to his unwillingness to recognize events as actually having happened.
Right.
Which certainly has bit him in the behind.
Right.
Much like Kevin the Bird might. He likes to eat the chocolate out of the bush with his little beak.
Yes, yes.
Oh, Kevin's so great. But I think that Alex has gotten into trouble, obviously, with the Sandy Hook knee-jerk reaction of thinking, oh, this must be fake.
Right.
It's just super consistent with him.
The whole
Everything
time.
Must fit into the storyline and the overarching narrative that he believes. You can see Red reinforcing that with putting everything on a certain trajectory. Ruby Ridge, the bombing of the World Trade Center, Oklahoma City, 9/11. It's all part of a progression to him as a, like, all of these things are being done by the globalists against the Patriots.
Right. And more specifically, him.
Yes.
Because he is the Patriots.
Yes. And that's dumb, but it's definitely indicative of their worldview. Is all of this shit is intrinsically connected, as opposed to like, well, there's a bunch of separate incidents of bad stuff.
You know what's weird? I don't understand being afraid of a nuke. I like, in the same way that I don't understand really being afraid of an asteroid, in a like fear sense. Like, obviously, like, the reason is because the next nuke is the last one, you know, like, it's for everything. It's for the world. The Maybe. Human race is over.
Maybe.
Just like if we get hit by a meteor, the human race is over. Like, why worry about an extinction event? You know, you got shit to... I'm worried about a cruise missile hitting Chicago, because then there's shit to deal with. People are going to have to fall... There's going to be a whole fallout.
Right.
If a nuke hits Chicago, an automated system happens, and everyone's dead.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe. I think that in the past, there have been discussions of absorbing a nuclear attack or something because of this very concern.
Yeah.
Of it just turning into the end of the world situation. And even if an asteroid hit, you wouldn't necessarily die immediately. You might have some stuff to deal with.
Sure, but what I'm saying
you might have some bad stuff to deal with.
See, but what I'm saying is, if that happened, I'm not dealing with any of that. I'm calling Dr. Kevorkian, baby. I'm done for. Assisted suicide all over. I'm not going to melt from radiation poisoning.
Well, all right. Personally, I don't understand why people fear the Reaper.
He seems like nice. Seems real nice. Never bothered me before.
So yeah, we get to the end of this, and I think Alex is a shithead. Well, that's my summation.
The end.
This trend of homophobia is really troubling.
Yeah.
It's intensely more overt than it has been at other periods in the past.
Yeah, I'm having very serious, like, immediate flashbacks to, because 2003 was when I was in high school. I was a sophomore and junior in high school in my small Christian conservative town, and the homophobia I remember is so intense.
Yeah.
And then to think about, like, my little sister is a teacher now, and the next generation of kids that she's teaching, she's almost resentful of them. Like, how dare you be so accepting of people? And it's like, I cannot believe how fucked up it was.
Yeah.
Just that short time ago.
Yeah, I think that's probably true a lot of times in terms of generational gaps. And you just hope that the progress that's being made is progress in the right direction.
Yeah.
And it seems like, at least on that front, it's a little better. But yeah, the other thing that I think it just sticks out to me is, like, these callers are polite.
They are.
The how are you doing?
They
and,
are.
And then the it's a hellscape. You take care. You have a good day.
Yeah.
Just absurdly so, to the point where it sticks out.
There's something to be said about how polite society enjoyed their hatred, but they were still polite about it.
Well, but the people who were calling in and were polite weren't the people who
were expressing
the horrible opinions.
Yeah.
One guy just wanted a Jello Biafra clip.
Yeah, Alex hadn't turned those people away yet.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Hopefully they found greener pastures.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll be back, but until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight, and @GoToBedJordan.
Yes, we will be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Daryl Rundus.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.